Go ahead.
Next thing is status, power, achievement. And during, on that one, I've talked a little bit about that, but I think it tends to lead more than anything to people that are very driven. They may deny important parts of themselves, repress the playful, enjoyable parts of themselves. They may accomplish a great deal in life. Maybe we don't see so many of these people in therapy, but when we do, they're very often very successful people, but they're not happy. That's their complaint. They may get depressed because they're so focused around their success in life that they've given up, they're unhappy in their family maybe and other aspects of their life because they're too focused on one part of their life. Also, it can lead to manipulative behavior because, again, you get the same thing. If my success and my work and everything is number one and my achievement, then that means it comes above other people and above being kind to other people and above treating people well. And so this person may be manipulative, do anything to get their way and to reach their goals. People who seek power are often people who come from backgrounds where at one point they were very low status, or maybe they were poor or didn't have much. And so during that early childhood experiences, maybe they felt that getting money or success or power was so important so they could get respect from other people. And they made it number one. And so their whole life, no matter how successful they are, though, they'll never quite believe that they have this success enough or that they have enough respect. And so you see this kind of unhappiness in people. People who over-identify with a role, a mother, that's her life, she's a mother. When the children are gone, there's the empty nest syndrome because she didn't see herself as a whole person. Mother was one role, she saw herself that I am a mother and that's my life. And sort of that role becomes almost the position of an ultimate concern. And it's fine, it seems to work pretty well when you've got children and it's working pretty well, but then when the children are gone, then that's it. For some people, their work's like that. When they retire, their life's over. Because that's who they were. That's who I am, a psychologist, and that's my life. That's how I define myself. One of the things that we can do is we can make a group, a nation, nationalism, all the nationalistic things that happen. We get wars between countries because people put their nation above everything else. Or even the church, Tillich points out, for example, and this we can use this in therapy. Because when you get somebody coming in who you can see clearly believe, it goes to a very authoritarian church and has a very authoritarian, rigid view of God, and the church is telling them this stuff, you can try to point out that that's maybe not what Jesus said. So you can get them to look at that. Tillich says that whenever you institutionalize something, that often you take something away, and there's this tendency to make the means to your goal your ultimate goal. So money is a nice, I'm not against money, I like to have money. I like to have success, I like to have all these nice things, I like to have love and affection. The problem is when you make them number one, when you put them too high in the hierarchy. And that's the mistake. Same with people do with church. How many people feel like if you didn't go to church, that somehow God's gonna punish you that Sunday, you know? Probably nobody here because you're all here today, but so that's, anyway, that's the next thing, greatest sources of anxiety and fear. I mentioned this earlier, but again, when we see somebody that's anxious, somehow in my mind, there's different kinds of anxiety. The biggest kind of anxiety, I guess you call existential, is the anxiety about your ultimate concerns. That's going to create more anxiety, be the biggest source of single anxiety in your life, especially if it's an improper one. But the other thing we see is people coming in anxious about being alone. Okay, for example, being alone or being poor, being ill, dying. So these are some of people's sort of greatest fears. They come in with these kinds of issues. And they're, again, the flip side of the coin about their fears of their ultimate concern. If my ultimate concern is my own health and happiness and my illness and being threatened with cancer or death, then obviously that's going to be very anxiety-producing to me. One of my greatest fears is something will happen to Sherry. You know, we have a wonderful marriage and we're happy and she's the love of my life. And, you know, and I think about, you know, if I have to know. The way I deal with that is I have to know that she's not my life. As much as I love her and that, you know, when she's out on the freeway and she's late coming home at night, I tell myself, I look, you know, if she did die, you're sad, that would, you know, I could still live. I'd go through a period of great sadness and depression, but I could rise above that, and at some point I could be happy in my life again. I could be okay with it. And sort of Nietzsche said, you know, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So that's real important to keep life in perspective and keep those things clear in their proper place in their hierarchy. Search these things out. Explore people's worst fears. It'll lead you right straight to their ultimate concerns and their highest values in their life. And then dealing with those kinds of issues and helping them find some plan so that they can find some sort of happiness and be okay despite their worst fears, then they'll get over their fears. And their fear will just sort of immediately go away. Focusing on these spiritual values is one way to do that. Okay, repression of doubt,